Our next speaker this morning is Larry Russell, a principal consultant for BST. BST is a global safety consulting firm that helps organizations create injury-free workplaces. Larry plans and executes behavior-based safety systems, behavioral driver safety processes, and executive coaching strategies that help his clients realize significant safety performance improvement. His presentation, The Zero Harm Organization, Shifting the Focus from Injuries to Exposures, he will discuss zero harm performance, which is about creating an environment where injuries are not acceptable and where we do everything possible to prevent them. In his words, we are not just targeting a lower number, we are aiming to develop a new way of thinking about safety performance. Please welcome Larry to Haulage and Loading.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning. Pleasure to be with you.
I can hear it.
Pull it down a little bit lower. My name is Larry Russell. I work for a company called Behavioral Science Technology, BST. When you work for a company named BST, you need to have a sense of humor. A lot of people drop the T, go right straight to the BS part. Don't call it behavioral science like we do. Let me define one word, behavior. When we talk about that, we're talking about an observable act, period. Society's definition of behavior usually means good or bad. I know that was when I grew up. If I heard the word once, I heard it a million times, behave yourself. It was never good. Most people, when they hear behavior the very first time, that's what they're thinking, good versus bad. And how many times do people come around and talk to you about your behavior and start off with the good? Most of the time, they're talking about the bad stuff. So behavior, from my terminology, means it's passing the camera test. It's an observable act. I can't see what's inside somebody's head, but I can see what's going on outside. We're going to be talking about something that most people are looking for, searching for, and that's a zero harm organization. We talk about nobody gets hurt, not wanting, having zero injuries, things like that. But I'm going to back up a little bit. I've been a safety professional, safety guy, all of my work life. I have never done anything other than safety work. For the last 21 years, I've been with BST. And I will tell you this, for a lot of years, I'm basically a field guy. I do a lot of project work out. And to me, the ultimate customer in safety is the person closest to the risk. I care about the CEOs in the organizations, and I care about division managers and mine managers and all those folks. But to me, the person out there closest to the risk at any given moment is my ultimate customer because that's the person most likely to get hurt. Frequency-wise and severity-wise, they got the highest potential. So when I keep them in mind, I tend not to turn the boat upside down. If I start thinking about political things for up the line, I do mess up a little bit. Now, for a lot of years, I fell onto the politically correct bandwagon of talking about some of the stuff. If you had known me 25 years ago, you would have heard me talking about injury, injury, injury. I very little would have talked about exposure. Today, I don't talk about injuries very much at all because I don't think we have to focus on that. I have people come up to me a lot of times and say, Larry, I've worked here for 25 years and I've never been hurt. What do you say about that? I say, congratulations, that's a good record. Did you ever work a day of your 25 years without exposure? You know what they all tell me? No. Have you ever lived a day of life without exposure? The answer to that is no. When you talk about injuries to the ultimate customer, the frontline worker, they tune out because they don't have them. In fact, in this room, one thing we all have in common, none of us ever been killed. We don't even like to think about that. You ever notice people say, if I die? There's no if to that. An industrial accident is not the way we want that to happen. We want a peaceful, long life for people. Unfortunately, exposure happens every day. Injury happens to very few people. If you talk about injury rates to a whole group full of people, they all sit around looking around and say, who's the guy that's going to get hurt? Because it's not going to be me. I've worked here a long time, never been hurt. And I know that, so I want to talk about exposure. One thing about an injury, every injury has an exposure that leads up to it. But every exposure that goes by does not result in an injury. If you want to look at cause and effect, you've got to look at exposure as the cause and injury as the effect. The traditional definition of an accident, in all my safety textbooks, my undergraduate and graduate degrees were in safety, and I gave this back on test answers probably hundreds and hundreds of times. I have a banana peel on the slide because of the oops factor. The oops factor is, have you ever noticed when we have a serious incident or an incident of any kind, what do people often say? Oops, didn't mean that. Oops, wasn't my fault. Oops, forgive that. We get the oops factor involved, and then we don't dig for the true multiple causes sometimes. We'll find a cause, we'll fill out the report, but we don't always get the multiple causes. And I'm a big fan and a believer in the multiple cause theory. It's not only behavior, and it's not only conditions. Usually you can look at both of them together and multiples of all of those together. And we need to be thinking about that. There's an updated definition of an accident that I want to propose to you. And again, I'm just making propositions. You can take or leave whatever you want to. But I believe that an updated definition, it's the unplanned result of an act or event that can be fatality, injury, or damage. Bruce mentioned a while ago standing on a chair to change a light bulb. If I would grab a chair and pull it over here and stand on it, that is not an unplanned act, folks. Never in my life, even on my worst day, have I ever blinked my eyes, found myself standing on a chair, hanging onto a light bulb, and did not know how that happened. That is not an unplanned act. If I'm out in a place where there's barricade tape to keep me out, because there's overhead hazards, and I lift up the tape and walk under it anyway, that's not an unplanned act. The unplanned part is something dropping on my head, something blowing down out of a valve to hit me. The unplanned act is the result that we often get. We're too focused on some result type stuff that happens so rarely that the average frontline worker doesn't believe is ever going to happen to them. If we'll think about this, then we start focusing, okay, what's going to happen here? A couple of other things that I want to take with you on some definitions. The traditional definition of safety that I've heard for years, I ask audiences to give me a listing of things. I don't have time to go through that right now, but let me just share with you what I typically get. One of them is working without injury or damage. That matches our target goals we talk about. Freedom from loss. There's all kind of losses. You can have loss of life, loss of limb, loss of money, loss of time, schedule, productivity. You can have loss of reputation, too, for an organization. Not having injury or illness, not being exposed to hazards. If you look at all of those, though, they're results-based and they're negative-focused. I didn't realize when I got into the safety career that my performance review at the end of the year was going to look back on all the mistakes the organization made. Nobody's against safety, but the way we count success is we look at mistakes. That's a backwards-looking definition. We have, at BST, we've started working with and been using for the last few years a proactive, forward-looking definition of safety, and I want to share that with you. Here's what safety is. I know what it's not. It's not injuries, it's not damage, it's not loss. But what it is controlling exposures for self and others. Notice I'm very, very careful about not saying eliminating exposures. I go into a mine site someplace, and the guys are going to say, we have shovels, and we have the haul trucks, and we got the crushers, and we work near the high wall, and we got the drill and blast, and we got all this kind of stuff. Don't stand here and tell me you're going to eliminate exposures. We're not going to have a business. That's probably true. We do risky things for a living. But what we have to do is control exposures, and we're already pretty good at this. We have procedures that when we follow properly, we're controlling the exposures. When we follow lockout, tagout, we're controlling. We haven't eliminated the things. If I just look both ways before I cross a street and make sure there's a good enough gap in traffic, I have controlled my exposures. So it's possible to do this without having serious problems. Is it possible to reduce the risk? The answer is absolutely yes. Now, when can we measure success? Anytime we're aiming at something, we need to know when we're successful. The definition of success here is it's immediate, job by job, task by task. One of the problems in safety that I have run across for years and been frustrated by is the fact that we have out-of-sight success meters. At the end of the month, we can tell you how we did in safety. What's our recordable rate? What's our lost time rate? What's our mistake rate? If I ask somebody right now, okay, it's middle of May, how are we doing in safety? Many people will point me back to last month. They'll point me to April and tell me what it was. If I say, well, how are we doing today? Well, we haven't killed anybody this month, but we don't know. This is immediate, job by job, task by task. When you're planning out a job, when you're getting ready to do some kind of a task, you can know immediately, did you watch where you're stepping? Did you use three-point contact getting up and on and off that equipment? Did you climb up and climb down, not jump down? Your exposure changes when you do those kind of things. So we can have line-of-sight success measures, and it can change the way people realize. Now, exposure versus injury. What do we mean by exposure? Basically, we mean potential for loss of any kind. In this case, we're talking about injury. Why is the mindset of preventing accidents a limiter? What happens when you go for a long string with no injuries? You don't know what to work on. Everybody feels like everything's okay, and that's when we get surprised. That's the problem. If you have a long string with no injuries, you have constantly still had exposure underneath the waterline of that. Stop work authority. Most places will tell me, Larry, we have stop work authority, and everybody knows it. Most people will say, yeah, if I thought a guy was going to die, I'd say something. Short of that, I'm not going to speak up because I'm the new guy. Or I'm the, you know, I don't even do that craft. I'm not in drill and blast. I can't tell those guys what to do. Those kind of things prevent us from actually using stop work authority when we need to. And we tolerate drift from centerline. If I, as a supervisor, go out and tell my guys, okay, we're kind of in a bind here. I'm going to stand here. You don't have to take the time to lock out and tag out and do all that kind of stuff. I'll be standing right here. I'll make sure nobody else gets in there. Variation from normal procedure is tolerated, and it'll get repeated. And oftentimes later, when we find an incident, we go back and we're surprised when we have variants from center lines or procedures. We've taught the organization to do that. It's okay. Anybody have some zero tolerance rules in your organization? Most people do. What's funny is sometimes when you say, well, if tomorrow, if your best guy violated that, what would you do? Well, if it was my best guy, that's not a zero tolerance. That's a sometimes tolerance. If we're not going to do it, if we wouldn't fire my best guy tomorrow if he did that, then you don't have zero tolerance. You got sometimes tolerance. Call it what it is. We've got to be consistent on that. Now, I don't think we need a 100-mile-long list of zero tolerance type things. There's a critical few things that we know are life-threatening. And we get those right, we'll be in good shape. We won't be, never have the possibility of anything happen to us, but we'll be in pretty good shape. Anybody ever seen signs going into a workplace, into a mine site, where it says number of days since the last injury, and it's got the number on there, whatever that number is? Many places have got them. Have you ever seen a sign that says number of days since the last damage? Isn't that a piece of the accident picture as well? That happens so often, we don't even keep track of that. I'm guessing that nobody has ever seen a sign that says number of days since the last exposure, but you could paint a zero on that and not have to keep track of changing the numbers every day. Because every single day in every single workspace, there's going to be exposure. And if we could control the exposure, those other numbers will take care of themselves. It's cause and effect as we go through there. I realize this is a busy slide. Up in the top left corner, you can see trends. You can't see details here unless later you get the PowerPoint slides. But you can see trends. And these are fatality trends. Up the top, top side up there, I think I've got a laser pointer here. Top left, you see the trend goes down, but it's flattened out. That's a fatality rate. Top right, you can see the red line goes out and flattens out. That's a fatality rate compared to recordable injury rates and lost time injury rates in oil industry. And then overall, on this bottom one, you see a big long line from 2000 to 2010. You can see recordable injury rates coming down, but fatalities, and that line going across there shows that the running average has not fallen at all. In fact, in the very last range, it went up. The single data point went up. We are getting better and better at having less recordable injuries, but we are standing around being surprised when people get killed or seriously injured. And that is a crime. Everybody's heard of H.W. Heinrich. Heinrich, in 1931, was a representative for Travelers Insurance Agency, did a study, came up with the triangle, and everybody's seen it. You know, for one fatality, you have so many injury. We've reproduced that study here in the last couple of years with these partner companies you see on the screen. And what we have found is that there was 10 out for every 1,028 cases, we had one serious injury fatality, 214 recordable, restricted lost work days, and 700 medical treatment cases. Numbers similar to what Heinrich said. It makes sense. Now, it is descriptive. You see that, but it is not predictive. Because one of the things that we did was we looked at all of the injuries that occurred, what were serious injury and fatality, life-changing, life-altering, or fatality-producing, and the exposures at the bottom, not every single one of those would do it. I could pinch my finger closing a laptop here. I could have an injury. All exposure is not equal. All injuries are not equal. There are some that are life-threatening and serious, and some that are not. What we found in that study was there's consistently 20% of the exposures we face that have the potential for ending in serious injury or fatality. Now, if I go around stopping paper cuts and twisted hangnails and all that kind of stuff. I may reduce a whole lot of stuff, but if we still got the potential for people to have serious injury or fatality, we have got our boat upside down. And we know, you can go back through, if you've got life-saving rules, certain types of rules, you've already got a track record and a history of the kinds of things, but we've got to measure those. Let me give you this takeaway from the presentation. Exposure is more important to talk about than injury, and all exposure is not equal. We have got to focus on the right exposures. I do worry about people having carpal tunnel and getting specks in their eyes and dust in their eyes and getting paper cuts. But honest to goodness, if I'm not getting the stuff that's going to kill them first, I'm spending a whole lot of time nibbling around on the edges of things that are not the high-risk type stuff. We have to have a vision for zero. I've got a client that I work with has got probably 90,000 people around the world. They have a slogan, nobody gets hurt. My ultimate customers, 75-80% of those people in that organization around the world, do not believe that. Nobody gets hurt. They tell me, I don't believe that. I know you got to say it, but nobody believes it. The vision does not percolate down because it's not a believable vision to the ultimate customer in many cases. Why is it important to say, well, you can't have a slogan coming down from on high that says, three get hurt. That's just not politically correct. You can't do that. So you got to set a goal. And I'm not against setting good goals. I went to Sakhalin Island, Russia with a company, and they had this nobody gets hurt slogan. And one of the Russian supervisors spoke English and Russian. He translated some stuff for me. He had a question for me early on. He says, I believe nobody gets hurt is a good goal. But he said, my guys don't believe that because we hurt one a week around here. How do I get there? We talked for a little bit, but we got into the presentation as he was translating. He came up to me at the first break, and I had covered this definition of what safety is, and he said, you've given me the bridge to nobody gets hurt. Safety is controlling exposures for self and others. He says, my guys can do that job by job, task by task. They cannot control whether or not this organization never has anybody get hurt. I need a bridge. I need a line of sight measure for my people. How do we talk about zero injuries, and what do we mean? Do we back up and talk about the causes, or do we just look at the results? Vision is important if I believe it and I live it. And people look to their leaders. They want to see what their leaders say, and they also look at what the leaders do. It's nice to have a goal of nobody gets hurt, but we got to be doing the things behaviorally, the observable acts, and we've also got to have the boss actually doing things to help us reduce the exposure that leads to that. We talk about in our leadership stuff that we work with those clients in the serious injury fatality study, vision, credibility, and feedback and recognition. You guys have heard this kind of stuff before. I don't need to get in the weeds here. I need to know what I'm aiming at. If I'm aiming at safety is controlling exposures for self and others, I've got a line of sight measure. I can pass that on to people. If I've got too broad of a vision, nobody gets hurt ever again from now till never, I've lost half my audience. My credibility is shot. Credibility is very, very important to the frontline worker. If I can't believe in my supervisor and his boss and my boss's bosses, if I don't believe in what they're doing, I want to make it up on my own when I'm out there. And I need feedback and recognition when I do it right as well as when I need correction. A leader, somebody has to believe in you and see what you're going to do, and you affect behavior. There's all kind of chicken and the egg discussions about behavior and attitudes and things like that. Some people say, well, you got to have the attitude first and then the behavior. That works. You do things you believe in. Change in attitudes is a kind of a strong proposition, and it takes a real long time. Changing the behavior is quicker and easier, and if the behavior changes, the attitude soon matches to fit that. Behavior is a path to beliefs. I can do things I don't necessarily believe in, but after I do it for a while, I start believing in it too. We're talking about the seatbelt use type things. I'm a traffic safety guy originally when I first started in safety, and I go back to the 70s. Seatbelt use in the United States of America was about 15%. You see the statistics of where we are now, it's very high. And you know a lot of people who just feel there's something not right if I'm not buckled up. Now, it's not 100%, but it's moved. And that's a place where we have made a behavior change, and now the belief has followed. What a leader does differently in front of their people sets the climate. Climate is not culture. There is a difference between the two. Don't have time to get into the details of that. But the climate is a temporary thing. If there's a serious accident occurs, there's a black cloud over a workplace, and that's a climate. We soon forget about those kind of things, though. Unfortunately, we do forget. But when things are going well, everybody says, hey, no problem, it's a sunny day, we got no problems, and we get surprised by some things. So leaders do things that set the climate. The followers change their behavior based on some of the climate that they see. If my leader is doing certain things, I'm going to try to do those kind of things. You do it long enough, your attitudes and your beliefs are affected, and overall you get a culture change. Culture is the way we do things here. That's what culture is. Here's what we're finding that advanced leaders are doing. There's less and less impact on, or less focus on total recordable and lost time injury rates, and more on what happened, the personal impacts, the feeling. I can tell when somebody's blowing smoke, when they talk about safety, lip service, I can tell when somebody's got the burn. Unfortunately, many, many safety leaders, good safety leaders, have had some serious incident that they've dealt with. I've had one fatality on my watch, personally, as a safety guy. That changed my safety career. I made a vow, never again on my watch, if I can help it, is somebody going to die. I went from being a safety technician as a new, fresh guy out of school to really being a safety guy. I almost quit that week because it was hard on me. But shame on me for thinking about me. It was the guy's wife and the three little kids, not a single one of them in school yet. And the guys that worked with him day by day, I was just the corporate safety guy, the seagull safety engineer. You know those kind, they fly in, squawk a lot, dump on you, and fly away. We didn't always help. But I was in and out of there every other month. I didn't see the things I shouldn't see. I did not see the exposure because I was counting the injuries, and we had a good injury rate. I had my focus in the wrong place. I could kick myself and have kicked myself for 36 years since that happened. We've got to focus on the right stuff. We need to keep case management vigor behind closed doors. I can get a lower injury rate by accurate and aggressive case management, and I can make public spectacles out of all kinds of people, and I can make a laughingstock of what we do. Some places have gotten, years and years ago, honest to goodness, I've seen this happen. Somebody get hurt, go to the hospital, get some treatment. Next day they're back in the plant or the mill or whatever it is, and they're laying in a bed in a clinic, and they got a video player rolled up to them, and they're calling it a training day so the guy did not miss work. And the way they built their long strings of no lost times was aggressive case management, which everybody knew was phony. We need to encourage stop work. I will tell you this. One of the ways to reinforce stop work authority is anybody, even the brand new guy, the newest guy on the property, if he says, I'm not sure, you stop it and you talk about it. I prefer the term pause work authority. We're not stopping it. We're just pausing it for a little while, and I've got a teachable moment. If that guy thinks it's at risk and he doesn't know and I can teach him better, if he threw the flag, he ought to get positive feedback, soon, certain, positive, every single time. He's more likely to do it. I've seen cases where the new guy says, I'm not sure that's right, and all the other guys give him the raspberries, and the supervisor comes over and says, you're crazy. No, stop it if it's really important. How many times from that guy's career on do you think he's going to do a stop work authority? He only needed one event to tell him they don't mean that here. We need to gather more information with live site visits. You can see trends and you can study charts and graphs and emails till you're cross-eyed. But until you get out there shoulder to shoulder with a worker in the workplace where it's close to the exposure, you don't know what's going on. We still need our trends. We still need our patterns. We're famous in safety of overreacting to single data points. We need to look at trend analysis, but we've got to get shoulder to shoulder in the field with people and question critical exposures and controls. The last bullet point in here, never walk past it. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because there might be too many of them. Mine would go up on this question. Have you ever walked past something you've seen, there's exposure, and you didn't stop and talk about it because you were so focused and so busy on something else? I have. Now, nothing bad happened out of that event, but it could have, seriously. If it's important, if it's exposure, other things need to take a back seat, and we got to get it controlled. The relentless drive to zero. We got to focus on exposure more than on the injury rates and the outcomes. Beliefs, attitudes, and all those kind of things are important. We set the tone, leaders set the tone for an acceptable exposure level. And I'm not talking gold plating and taking it zero exposure or eliminate exposure. We're just talking about controlling exposure for myself and for others. And commitment versus compliance is a thing. Hypothetical question, what if every single safety rule book in all of your organizations burned up tonight, went to ashes. Every copy was gone. Every file on the electronic folders was gone. And everybody in your organization got collective amnesia. Nobody could remember a single safety rule. We walk in the gate tomorrow. Could we still work safely? The answer to that is absolutely we could, because we'd start interacting with risk again. We'd look at stuff and say, that's hot. Don't touch it without something between you. That's heavy. Get some help. Watch out, because this stuff comes from that direction all the time. We would start our interaction with risk, with exposure, and do what we've got the big letters and the signs at the gate says, think safety. We would actually be doing that instead of just complying with a big, thick rule book that gets thicker every year instead of thinner. I'm not against rules. I just think we got so many, nobody knows what they all are. And we've got to focus on the exposure. We sometimes say, well, our safety rules are written in blood. That's probably true. But what it says, too, is we were not smart enough the day before to see it coming. We had to wait till it happened. And we got 20/20 hindsight, but we're not really predictive in nature. I am a recovering safety professional. I've been in the business for 38 years. I used to focus a lot on injuries, and I quit talking about that. I think we don't need to talk about that so much. In fact, we recommend to people these days, you got to keep the records for the government, but don't drive your decision-making off those numbers. Look at your true exposure, and if you're not measuring exposure on a regular basis, you need to figure out some way to do that and look at the trends in that instead of the trends in just the injury rates. We look at both, but the trend in exposure is the far, far more important trend that you need to get a handle on. They say I need to quit when I get done. I'll come to the end of the slides here. If there's any questions, happy to deal with those. Be around during the break time if you need to. I know we need to press on and let our next speaker get on the wagon here. Thank you all very much.